you want to do it, if you want something that bad, just go for it. I did struggle at the beginning. I went into Accrington Stanley telling my teacher that, I've got a casting actually today. I've got a casting with a big agency in Manchester. I'm going to become a model. And I just had everyone just laugh at me.
I swear.
Everybody laugh. You just got to block out the haters and just honestly go for it. Wow. I thought you said we weren't gonna. God damn, bro! What have I got myself in for? Damn.
All right, so guys, welcome back to the Next Online podcast. Again, I'm your host, Ephraim Nailoka, and today we have a special guest. So today we've got a guest who is a working model. So he's modeled for JD, Mercier, Lorenzo, Foot Asylum, Sanucci, and even featured in Vogue magazine, guys. Welcome to the pod, Juvi Okuru.
Thanks for having me, man.
Bro, how you doing, bro?
Yeah, I'm good, man.
Yeah?
It's been a while, you know?
It's been a long time, bro.
It's been a long, long time. How you doing, bro?
Chilling, man. Blessed.
That's good, man.
All right, so to start off the pod, I think it's best to give the viewers a bit of insight about how we actually know each other.
Okay.
And how we, like, kind of first met and stuff like that. So, from your perspective, bro, how do we first meet? How do we know each other?
Where do I start now? It's been a couple of years
ago.
All right, so I won't be able to know exactly how many years, but I'll probably say 2-3 years.
Or maybe. Ago?
Yeah, well, how long? No. Longer than that, isn't it?
Longer than that, bro.
Okay, maybe 5-6 years.
Yeah, five, six years.
That means it was tight.
Ages ago.
Yeah, you're right, it was tight. Okay, 5-6 years. I used to work at River Island. You also used to work at River Island. And yeah, that's kind of how we met each other, became friends from that, you know, talking during shifts and then on a break with chat after shifts. And yeah, that's been it, really. To be fair, when I first came, I struggled because I didn't know how to work the tills. I made a good few too many mistakes. But obviously, you just learn your way while you're there. So
yeah.
But now it's good experience. Good to say, like, it's something that you can put on your CV, do you know what I mean?
But yeah. How long did you work there for then, so?
So
we started when I was 16 at the time.
So yeah, you were 16. I think I started, it might have been the first, you know, when you came that first time, that I think maybe a couple months before that, I came. No, actually.
I thought we started at the
same
time.
I don't think you started at 16 then. I think you started a bit later because I worked there beforehand, before I came back. Because basically I was a temp as well. I came for like a couple of months and done a Christmas temp contract. And then they weren't hiring people, or maybe I just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
No hard feelings, I left. Then a couple years later, I was looking for a job again. I wasn't playing football at the time, so I kind of was just looking what's around. My older sister, she was working there. And she was just like, you might as well just apply.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I just gave it another shot and then they kept me on ever since.
No, like, to be fair, I feel like everybody needs like a first job in retail. Like, everybody needs to start off in retail.
Exactly.
It's character building. I remember like one of my first shifts, yeah, I got shouted at by this guy. I forgot what he was like. I think I forgot to take off the tag.
Yeah.
So I forgot to take off the tag and then he walked to the end of the store, then he got stopped by like the security guards and then he came back and shouted at me in front of like everybody, bro.
I think that's not even a bad mistake, to be fair. I'll probably make it worse. Yeah. I remember there was one time I used to make small little mistakes here and there, but there was one mistake where it's such a silly mistake. I'm packaging someone's like clothes into the bags. And obviously you have to tag everything, you know, untag everything. So I've untagged everything and I was gonna put it all into the bag at the end. I think I left one item out of the bag and obviously he'd paid for everything. They've gone home, they've checked the receipt and they were like, something's missing here. But I've left it like somewhere in the tills. And obviously he's come back to the store and he's like, I paid for this item, but I didn't get it.
Yeah.
They checked the cameras and Deason, you remember Deason, right?
I don't remember anybody's
name. Yeah, it's been too long for you, to be fair. Deason, anytime I used to get into trouble, he'd always look at the cameras and then all he can just see, he told me anyways, there was a couple of times where I'd make a mistake. And then I look up to the camera, just cheeky little smile. Like, I know what I've done.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously I didn't mean to do it. It's a bit late. But that one I did not know, just to be clear. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, just little silly mistakes like that I used to make, man. But you're still young. You're still learning. It's good for the future, so then you don't make the mistakes, basically.
Wow. Retail, bro. Wow. Retail. I think in another episode I'll talk about, like, because I've had, like, quite a few jobs since then. So, first job was River Island. Then I worked in...
Is it Next?
No, I worked in IKEA.
Did you work at Next? No, it was IKEA.
I worked in IKEA, worked in Iceland for a bit, worked at AQA, the exam board.
Okay.
Worked there for a bit. And I worked in John Lewis. So that was my last retail job that I had.
Yeah.
I was there for like a year and a bit. But that's not for this episode, bro. Today's about, all about you, bro. So when we first met, you were into football as well. I think like one of the first conversations was like you talking about football and like, you know, that you wanted to be a footballer in the future and stuff like that. So obviously when I first met him, he was talking about that. And then obviously as the years went by, football kind of went to the side a bit and then you started focusing a bit more on modeling. Mm-hmm. So can you just talk to us a bit more about your journey with football and how you kind of fell in love with football and your journey so far with that?
Okay, so as a kid, I was born in Ireland. So I used to play hurling and Gaelic football. Those were like my national sports. Never really thought about football, they call it soccer over there, but because obviously we've got a national sport, Gaelic football, everyone calls that football. Nice. But when I moved over, it wasn't really like, it was a no-brainer. Everyone played football. So I kind of got influenced around the people that I've like surrounded by, and obviously I'm a very sporty guy, so it was just easier way to make friends. It's not like there was a language barrier because I could speak English, playing football was like another way of like speaking to someone, but without having to speak. It's like you're a thing. You've got something in common. So I'd probably say during high school period, that's when I started to gain like, oh, this is actually something that I like. I did play a bit in Ireland, but not too much. And then my friend's dad, he was a coach and he lived like... a couple houses behind my house, and he was always saying, oh yeah, dude, I think you should come over to our Sunday league team. Like, we're looking for players, this and that. My mum moved over on her own with my two older sisters and me, so my dad really wasn't much in the picture. So obviously it's going to be hard for her to get me to training, then she's got to go to work, and then he's going to get me back. So he spoke to my mum and he was just like, I can help out. You live around the corner from mine. You can just come with us in the morning. That kind of happened. They sorted me out with lifts and I was just going back and forth to training. And then at the side of that, I was also playing football with my brother, coaching my brother as much as I can because he was still really young. And obviously as an older brother, he kind of looks up to you. So it's like, I've got to be that role model figure because I'm like the man of the house at this point. So I was training my brother and obviously taking it as serious as I can. My brother's watching me and together we're both just trying to strive for our dreams to become like that 1% who makes a pro, you know? I just fell in love with the game since there. I've been to a couple of grassroots team and then I got the chance to go to, this was during like closer to GCSE period. I got the chance to go to Rochdale. So I went there and I was playing with the development team and I think it was my last year, I was trying to see because they're pushing players up to get scholars. Before that, I'd been on like a couple of trials. But Rochdale was like the highest level that I'd say this is like a standard that I'd want to play for. Rochdale, they were offering scholars to some of the development players and at the end of the season, I wasn't the brightest in school. During GCSE period of times.
We'll get into that a bit later on.
We'll get into that bit. That's when I kind of found out that I had... we'll get into that bit. We'll get into that bit. Went to Rochdale and I had an eye-opener that I'm not going to be the best player like everywhere I go. There's going to be players that are better than me. So I learned a lot from that experience. After that experience, I then went on to Burnley. I played with the Shadow Youth team at the under 18s level, and it was really, really good experience as well. Got to meet players from like all over, because they had players from Ireland, they had players from Scotland, different players that they'd pulled from different areas.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was a good experience. And then obviously playing the teams that we did get to play, I'm learning each game. But yeah, then after that, then went on to Accrington Stanley. And I'd probably say Accrington Stanley was probably where I started to fall out of love with the game. I had a...
What age was this?
I'll probably say I was like 19-ish, maybe maybe a bit older. I'm not exactly how old I was, but I'll probably say that's where I started to fall out of love with the game mostly. My confidence was just going up and down. I shifted my fibula, so I was out for a couple of months, and then trying to get back into the squad, it was a real struggle. And then I got an agent at the time, and he was trying to find other clubs, because obviously if I'm not getting minutes, then hopefully I can go out on loan. And then the season kind of ended, and I knew I wasn't going to get pushed to like first team or anything. I knew like you got to be realistic with yourself. And with the team doing so well, I wasn't going to get in anyways because of my injury. And I'd already said to myself, like, the manager's not going to make any changes here because if everything's going to plan, why?
I can hear it, yeah.
So I decided to try FC United of Manchester. And that's where I kind of regained love of the game. But then other distractions started happening. And other things, like, that's how I started to get into modelling. And then I started going down the semi-pro route, and yeah.
Are you doing semi-pro now?
Well, currently, this season, I'm not playing any football, but last season, I was playing at Warrington Town.
Nice.
So, which is a pretty decent level, to be fair. But it was just, for me, it was hard to balance modelling and football. So I decided to just take the season out and just see what happens. And I left River Islands. And it kind of just went from there, really.
So you would class yourself as like a semi-pro?
Yeah, I class myself as.
All right, cool, bro. So before we get into like the whole career aspect of things, kind of want to go a bit back to high school. So did you go high school in Manchester, or did you go high school in...
So I went to high school actually in Bolton. And the first high school I went to, I don't even want to give them the clout. The first high school I went to, it wasn't great.
Okay.
And to be fair, I'm not the brightest pupil anyways, so it just wasn't right fit for me, let's just say. So I went there for a year and I left to go to another high school, and things worked out, got the support I needed. I found out in my last year that I've got dyslexia. And it was a bit of a struggle because it was like, oh, I've got GCSEs now. I'm playing football, I'm trying to get a scholar at Rochdale. Everything's just it's a lot.
It's a lot to balance, yeah.
Like, and as I said, I wasn't the brightest. I was trying to find...
So was there certain subjects that you were good at?
Oh, yeah.
Apart from PE?
Ah, yeah.
Apart from PE, were there any subjects that you actually found, like, a liking to? Or was it just kind of, like, in general, you just didn't... You weren't that great in school?
You know what? I did like chemistry. I was good at chemistry.
Okay.
Sports science, obviously, you know yourself. I was good at that. But my English as well, I did kind of like English. I think, to be fair, it was because of my teacher. She was the way she taught English and the way she taught it. I think that's what made me to grow like fun to it. But yeah, English and chemistry, I'd probably say those two were my favorites.
So when you found out you were, when you diagnosed officially with dyslexia?
Diagnosed.
So when you found out you were diagnosed, did that kind of change the way you kind of thought about education? Did that kind of change any future plans for you? Like, how did that kind of affect you?
When I was diagnosed, my mom kind of, she knew somewhat that there might be something different with me because I'm putting in all this effort and I'm not seeing the results. It might be the way I'm learning it. And my mom said this a couple of times, but I was kind of like, oh, you know what? And you know, like, for you obviously growing up in a black parent home, you know, some of them, they just be like, not my son, you know. But for my mom to say that, it says a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And my mom, she done a lot for me. Like, she, back in Ireland, English as well, I struggled a lot with it. Mm. So it wasn't just the thing where when I moved to England, it was... I struggled a lot with it. So my mom got me an extra tutor. So outside of... This is during primary school times.
Oh, swear. Yeah. During primary school times.
So English and just maths and everything. Mm. English and maths, those were my mom got me a tutor for in primary school. Mm. So she kind of got it from young. She's like, there's something not right here. Yeah. So if it wasn't for her, I don't even honestly know where I'd be today, speaking English like the way I am right now, or even writing, picking up a pen.
Oh, wow.
But no, it was definitely very challenging at first. But with the right support, my school, they kind of encouraged me and they taught me ways to learn. I started using flashcards. Nice. And I feel like during that, I started doing more mocks. I was coming into school extra early and my school actually shut at 4. So I would stay an extra hour after school
to try
and do some extra work with the teachers. Mm-hmm. So I'd finish at 5. Mm-hmm. I'd come an hour early before school and the principal would actually, I'd sit in his office during high school times. Wow. And there's not many, I probably wouldn't think of there's many high schools that a principal would sit down with and actually, you know, teach you, because he's not a teacher anymore. He's a principal. Mm-hmm. So he was brilliant. No matter what I'd gotten in my GCSEs, I was just gonna be proud that I'd done enough, and you know, I'd given it everything I got, because I didn't want to live with a regret. Mm-hmm. Do you know? Mm-hmm. But no, it was definitely a struggle at first, but obviously, you know, we got there in the end.
Let's touch a bit more about being in a single parent household. How difficult that might be as well, because I know for a lot of people nowadays, they might be growing up with just a mom or just a dad. Most of the time it's just like a single mom household kind of thing. So can you kind of talk about how you navigated growing up in a single parent household, not growing up with a dad, how that kind of affected you? Did it affect you at first, or did it affect you later on in life? How is it like kind of having that responsibility of kind of parenting your brother as well, kind of be like that father figure? So yeah, talk a bit more about that.
Honestly, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be until I started to get a lot older. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, obviously your mommy's boy, your mommy would just look after everything. But as you start to mature into a man, there's certain things that your mom can't teach you. Mm-hmm. You need a father figure there to teach you. But with the network I've got around me, the support, friends, family, uncles, aunties, you know how it is. It's kind of like even going to church, you can just, everyone's quite... they're quite comfortable for you to speak out, basically. Well, in my family anyways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll probably say I'm still learning, to be fair.
Really?
But you learn as you go. There was things like shaving. You know how it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you don't shave properly, then you start to get razor bumps and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it'd be good to have a role model, someone to teach you how to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then you don't have to go through them things. But obviously, I spoke to my barbers, my uncles. They told me exactly what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So the network around me, it was a struggle, but I had the right people around me to support me. So it wasn't really an issue.
Was it a thing of your dad left, or is he?
My mum and dad, they split when I was a kid.
Okay.
I'm not going to get into they split when I was a kid, and... My dad, he lived in a separate house to my mum, so I'd see my dad on the weekend and I'd see my mum during the week. Mm-hmm. And it was just half and half. And then my mum decided to move over to England, because obviously there's more opportunities over here. And my mum knew I was quite sporty. Mm-hmm. I did come over here initially a year before my family did. Mm-hmm. And this was for sport. So my mum spoke to a couple of people that had obviously moved over beforehand, and she said, oh, I think it'd be beneficial for your son to see if he could, you know, hopefully get signed here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then obviously for my sisters as well, my mum was looking at that kind of an aspect. So she decided to just, you know, package her load and just go, you know, that guy must go and just go. Mm-hmm. Simple as, man. And I think honestly it was the best decision.
Yeah.
The best decision at the time for me, because again, I don't know where I would be today if I was still in Ireland. Not saying that there's anything wrong with living in Ireland. Ireland's honestly, it's a great place. I went back for St. Paddy's Day and it was honestly an unreal experience.
Drinking a lot.
Drinking too much, right? I think it was a good decision for me at the time.
So after you decided that football kind of wasn't for you, let's talk a bit more about your modelling. How did you get into that? What kind of drove you towards modelling kind of? So,
my sister, she's going to finish me if I don't say her name.
Victory or Victory.
So, I was always into influencing YouTube and stuff like that, but I never really had the confidence to make YouTube because you know how it is in high school.
Yeah.
I think I probably did make a couple of videos and then I deleted them or archived them, just made sure no one could see them on the net. I was always into content creating or just putting myself out there in front of the camera. And my sister, she was into it as well. It was our kind of thing that we had in common. So she started doing small little shoots with different brands. She did a bit of modeling when she was in Ireland, my two older sisters. So they had experience. So when we moved over, my sister, she was trying to see where she can, work with other brands. And then she started working with a couple of other brands, influencer wise, or send her some products, some gift things. And then she would go out, take some photos, post on social media. And I just basically follow along. I would take the photos. If she needs me, I'll be her cameraman.
Yeah.
And then my sister, a couple of times, she's like, oh, you know what? Your outfit looks good here. Why don't you take a photo?
Then
I'd go in front of the camera. And these times, it could be around Manchester streets or anything. Jump in front of the camera, take a couple of pictures. Everyone's looking at you going past. So I kind of just, fell in love with it. And I never really seen it as a job. I don't think my sister did too at the time. But my GCSEs were finishing now. I had had my mum's friend, they'd also support my mum with tutoring lessons and stuff. So I'd go to school, stay after hours, and then I'd go straight to theirs. I'd do a couple of hours there, so I was really doing to the max. So they'd feed me everything, and then they'd drive me home. They don't need to do that, but they were doing that anyways. She was one of the, their family was one of the families that really took me in when we first all came to England. They helped to support my mum a lot. So I owe them quite a lot. So they're also seeing that I had struggles in school. They were also thinking about the long term, about what I'm going to do. And there was a time where my mock exam came back. And I just broke down. It was bad. And I honestly did not know what my future was to hold because I wasn't looking like I was going to get a scholar. And they said to me a couple of times, a couple of years back, they did say to me, have you ever thought about doing modelling? Nah, I'm a footballer. I want to kick football. One time they just said it to me and was just like, have you ever thought about it? And I was just like, no, but you know what? I wouldn't mind.
You were open to it.
I'm open to it. Not knowing that God already had a plan for me, So they had spoken to someone else that they know, but owns an agency, and I didn't even know this is a thing. Didn't even know that that's what happens. That's what happens. They spoke to someone that they know that owns the agency that I'm at right now, Brother Models in Manchester.
So have you been at the same agency since you were?
The same family since.
Flipping, yeah.
And I've just grown basically. They've been looking after me really, really well. The support there has just been amazing. They spoke to them, came in during, I think this after COVID. I came in for a casting. And this is actually a couple of years after my GCSEs. So I'd gone into college. I was still kind of playing football. I was playing at Burnley. It was during Accrington Stanley time. Then went in for the casting. We were speaking about the modelling. I was still football, because it's still my goal. But once Accrington Stanley, I could see that coming to an end. It was like cards on the table. What's next?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because semi-pro's only so good But if you get injured, what's next?
Yeah.
You'll get, like, if you got insurance, that's great. Mm. But you need something that is going to be able to retire you. Mm. You need something like a backup plan.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got the best education, not saying I haven't got the best education, but if you've not done the best in education, then you're setting yourself up to fail if you've not got a backup plan.
Yeah.
But anyways, went into the agency and I was nervous.
Yeah.
Sweating.
So that first time you stepped into that room.
That setting, yeah.
So was it like, so what did it look like? Was it like a bunch of other people there at the same time? Like, was it just you and a director or?
So it was me and my mom's friend's son. Well, now I basically call him my uncle because that's what he is to me. He's basically just family.
Yeah.
And you probably think, oh, this is a black family I'm talking about. It's not a black family I'm talking about.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Okay.
So that's what I mean when I say they took me in. As one of their own. So they invited me into the office. I sat down. I'm nervous.
Sweating.
I can't even string a line. I'm stuttering.
Yeah.
I'm not really saying much. They got me to stand up. Took some shots. Front face shot, side shot, blah blah. Ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
They wanted me to ask questions to see,
if you were interested.
If I was really interested.
Yeah.
I think the only question I asked was, "When can I start?" or something like that. I didn't really know what to ask. But he was like, "We really like your look. You seem like a really well mannered lad." So because I was just making sure, I said honestly, I was just so happy to be there. And if nothing comes from this, wow, like...
Yeah, thank you for even getting me in this room. Like,
exactly, suppose, you know? So, yeah, I kind of just... It went from there. At the beginning, it wasn't easy. Was not easy. I started working in River Island then again because, obviously, you know, you need to have your own money.
Yeah.
And my mum's a single mother. I need to be able to support her as well. So obviously looking up to my sisters, they support my mom. So I'm kind of like, you know what?
Yeah.
I need to pull my weight here now as well. I'm getting a bit older. And yeah, I got the job there and then didn't work any modeling jobs for a while.
So can you touch a bit more about that? So people who are initially starting in like the modeling industry, so they start with maybe the impression that as soon as they get into an agency, then that's it. They're just going to be working back to back like all the time. So can you talk a bit more about like the reality of like when you first start out, how it must feel when you don't get any jobs? Is it discouraging? Like, So like, yeah, talk about a bit more about that.
I think for everyone, everyone's story is different. Nobody's path's the same. God's got different plans for everyone. So yeah, I'll probably say for me, it was definitely very discouraging because you're looking online, looking on your agency's website and you're like, wow, this person's just done this today.
Mm-hmm.
This person's just done that today.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
You shouldn't compare yourself to others. God did not make everyone the same. So why are you comparing yourself?
Yeah, 100%.
But obviously back then, I'm still very young, very naive, thinking if they can do it, I can do it. Which is...
That's the kind of attitude you need, though, to be fair.
It's very good attitude to have in some aspects. But in this kind of a jobs scenario, you've got to be realistic with yourself. How much experience do they have? How much do you have? Like, and are you ready for that? Because I'm not confident at these times. So if I go into my agency, I want this, I want that. I'm going to go there and I'm just going to crumble under pressure. It's just not something I'm used to, you know? I did struggle at the beginning because obviously I went into Accrington Stanley telling my teacher that, I've got a casting actually today. I've got a casting with a big agency in Manchester. I'm going to become a model. And I just had everyone just laugh at me.
Oh, swear.
Everybody laugh.
What?
And the teacher was just like, oh, do we want to become a hand model? I think this is probably what like affected my confidence going in as well. And I was just like, no, obviously they were joking about it.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a time and a place for certain jokes, you know?
100%.
And obviously I joke around a lot.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to think before you make a joke how it's going to affect someone. And it did affect me. And obviously being at Accrington Stanley, my team that I played with, there wasn't really much black people in the team. So I already felt out of play, which obviously wasn't easy. I was traveling from Bolton to Accrington Stanley every single morning to play, trying to make it, like, hopefully make it to the top. But yeah, it wasn't easy at the beginning, but my support network, they just helped me through it. I spoke to the team, and they just helped to build me up until I was ready to fly, basically.
And I think, like, when you first start anything, whether it be modeling or whether me just starting, like, this podcast, at first people have a lot to say, bro. Like, the opinions of others, like, it's crazy, because you might have this, like, massive dream, but then when other people start laughing or discouraging you or telling you to, like, just be realistic, kind of, bro, it kind of puts you off. It's like,
definitely,
I have this dream, but then your people around you are kind of discouraging you, so it kind of makes you feel this type of way. Do you know what I mean? So how did you, well, you said it was through your network and stuff that kind of, like, built you up and stuff like that, but what would you say is to maybe somebody who wants to start modeling and who wants to do what you're doing now, but they don't have the people around them to kind of uplift them either, like everybody just kind of, like, laughing, mocking, like saying, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that? Like,
honestly, I would probably say, if you want to do it, if you want something that bad, just go for it. Realistically, what have you got to lose? Because you'll regret it. With modeling, you've only got a short time limit. So if you don't do it within that time limit, then your chances, it's like a footballer, your chances are getting slimmer. You've got to back yourself and just do as much test shoots as possible. My agency, they pushed me out to do my first test shoot. And from that, I learned my best side in front of the camera, different poses. The photographer's obviously speaking to me. I'm looking on social media, learning loads. And I'll probably say, do your research. Do your research. Find out what works for you. And then look at different agencies in your area.
Is there things that people need to look out for when
looking for agencies?
For agencies, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of scams going around. So you have to be careful. But obviously you can check it. I'm pretty sure there's a website called Models One. So you can look on that website and just, there's a list of agencies there, and you can see which ones are actually legit. If they're not on there, I wouldn't trust them. But there are some agencies that are new evolving agencies. You can just speak to them and just suss it out, but you shouldn't have to pay to sign with an agency. I've had a couple of people come up to me saying they paid this and that, but,
and you're just like, you idiot.
To be fair, honestly, like, if I
didn't know what you
if mean. I didn't know, then do you know what I mean? So
you joined your agency, is it called Brother Models?
Yeah.
So you just mentioned as well, like, the kind of things to look out for when applying for, like, agencies and stuff like that. So what do you think then is the difference between having, and do you think everybody should start with the agency? Because some people, they decide to just go and get, like, a manager or something like that. So what's the kind of difference between having a manager and signing into an agency?
My advice would probably say, you could, it depends, really.
Okay.
Because I'd probably say grow your social media first.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no point applying if you've got nothing to show.
Sure.
But I'm not saying go out and do a pay and do a test shoot, but just go out and just, you know, take some photos with your phone and just outside street life, get a couple of your outfits that you like and just get some photos that way. Just get something on your social media because the way it's going now, they look at your social media, they look at all your platforms, your engagement, everything is, it's important. It's almost like another CV.
Okay.
Because not everything, realistically, is going to actually fit on your portfolio, you know? So just starting out, you don't need to build a following, but just get some decent images content on there.
Yeah.
You don't need to pay to go get a photographer. And then just go from there, step by step, grow. And then I'd probably say, if you're not getting interests from brands that way, like if brands are not DMing you, asking you to do shoots, then maybe you might need an agency because their client base that they have, they might be able to help you to progress and push you on. So yeah, I'd probably say try them steps first and then before you try to get an agency, because for some people they don't need an agency or they can just manage it themselves. It's nice to have a team that has obviously got your best interest and they can push you out to their client base as well. and you don't really need to work. You don't need to worry about negotiations or getting paid on the court. They know how the industry works, and they know that they know basically they've been in there for years, so they know what to do with you basically.
So can you talk a bit more about how the agencies are kind of structured and how they work? So is it a case of they all send you jobs and then they take like a percentage, like a 15% percentage of that? Is it a case of they ask you which jobs that you want to do and then they kind of like reach out to those brands? Like how does it kind of work?
So at the beginning, you can go in and you can sit down with them and have a chat about what brands you're initially interested in. So if there's any brands you could see yourself working with, they've obviously got their image as well of you, and you can kind of just speak to see if your plans align. And then obviously if you do, if they do align, then that's when you can decide to sign. But if you're already signed, then at the beginning of the year, my agency, they'll have like a meeting with me and we'll talk about how last year went and what we want to do different this year, what are the plans. And yeah, then you can give up, you express the plans you have for this year, what brands you want to work with. And then just go from there. And they'll try and push you out to them brands. And with every contract that you do get, there is a percentage that obviously the agencies, they'll take as well. It's different for every agency. But you can, again, it's a business. You can negotiate prices. Yeah, yeah. If you're not happy with anything, speak out. Don't feel that you can't speak out because it's your career at the end of the day. So you've got to be able to speak out. But yeah, that's the chill.
But do you think as well, when you have those meetings with your agency and they kind of have a vision for you, or you kind of like work together into, you know, building something that you want to have eventually in the future, when they're doing that, how, like, would you say the kind of agency that you've applied with affects the kind of jobs that you end up getting? Is there certain agencies that certain brands might not like? Is there a bit of politics basically with like the agencies and the kind of jobs that people get? If you know what I mean.
It's honestly, there's just a lot of opinions, you know. Everyone's opinionated. So what, with everything, like, everyone's got their own opinions. Some people think if you sign to this agency, you're not going to be able to work with this client because like, this agency's got this amount of clients, they don't have this client base. But honestly, you just got to do your research and speak to the team before you sign. What are their goals with you? What clients do they have? And do your own research online, basically.
And then when you get the contracts, have you heard any kind of like horror stories with like certain contracts and stuff like that? Because I've been doing a bit of research into like the industry and stuff like that. Some people say when you work with certain brands, they don't pay on time. It might take like a few months for the payment to come.
You know, you've done your research.
Like,
God damn, bro. What have I got myself in for?
So have, like, because obviously you're in that industry and you've like obviously probably talked to your other model friends or people in the industry. What have they kind of said, or have you experienced like a brand that you might have worked with that have kind of like taken the mick basically with like payment or anything like that? Or has yours been kind of smooth sailing, if that makes sense?
So obviously while I was working at River Island, I was still modeling part-time. And with modeling at that time, I wasn't full-time, obviously. So with the payments, it can take sometimes up to 3 months. 3 months latest, sometimes you get a bit early. But it varies on your agency. Some agencies, you get paid all your money at the end of the month because of the type of contract it is or what they've got going on with the bank. So they're able to give it to you and then they'll wait. You're basically owed them money. They're waiting for the client to pay the money for you, which you will get the money, but you just don't have to wait. So every contract's different. I obviously, my contract at, while I was at River Island, I was part-time, I wasn't full-time, and I was still kind of playing semi-pro here and there. So I wasn't obviously able to commit. And obviously I needed regular income. And because I wasn't working regular, that's why I was working at River Island, until obviously it got to a case where I was missing too many shifts. It was either one or the other, you know? But yeah, God kind of made that decision for me. A couple of other stuff happened at River Island, but God made the decision for me at the time, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean. So yeah, so when you are looking at like those contracts, because it obviously depends on like the agency and stuff like that. I've heard like some stories of people not receiving payment after like nine months, 12
but
months.
The thing is, you hardly, if you're working regular, then you won't really notice it because the money's just coming in. It's a thing that you won't notice. But I'll probably say it's good to keep your own check of like when something's coming in, because sometimes you might need to message your agency to chase this up, or they might have forgotten about it. But it's just good to keep your own log for your book, because at the end of the day, you are self-employed, so it's a business. You gotta be able to keep, you gotta have your own logbook, basically. But yeah,
tell us, maybe like if somebody wants to become a model, what are the pay ranges? If you're working, let's say, like for a commercial brand, let's say, like, is JD commercial? Would you classify?
Yeah, JD, I'd say is quite commercial. Yeah.
What would you say, kind of like for a model, like roughly how much, like per shoot, would they? I know it varies on like experience and like stuff like that. But let's say you just first starting out, and you just signed a deal with JD. They say they want to use you for, because I know like if it's a campaign, it's a bit different from if it's just like a paid ad and stuff like that. How do they kind of vary?
It all really depends on usage.
Okay.
And obviously your negotiations with your agency, because I'm assigned to my agency, JD, I haven't had this where they've offered me a contract and said, oh, we're going to use Juvie for this amount of times for the month, and he's going to get paid this. We don't want him to work, because if you get a contract like that, you're not allowed to work for any other clients. It's just that. I know there's other clients that do that, but obviously I'm signed by an agency, and at the moment I haven't had the opportunity to get a contract like that. But yeah, it varies on depending on usage, like if it was going to be in store, and depending how long it was going to be in store, like 6 months, 3 months, it will vary how much you're going to get paid. And if it's going to be global, or if it's just in Europe or whatever it is, it varies. But the agency, they usually negotiate that, and it's a good thing to know if you don't have an agency yourself, so then you know that you're not going to get like undercut. You don't just see yourself in like another country and be like, you know, I should have asked for more for this, but you didn't ask in the beginning, so
okay,
it's a good thing to ask.
And working with like the different brands that you have worked with, is there a certain brand, you don't have to say the name of the brand, they were crap to work with, basically, like
okay,
where you can say it, and then I can just cut it out.
Which one do I start with? Okay, so I don't like, we're gonna beat this all out now.
Now you can say it. I'm gonna.
Honestly, it's just like, you know, with high school. Yeah, I'm just gonna use that as an example.
Yeah.
It's not everyone you're gonna like in high school. You know, you work with a load of different people. Same with modeling. You meet a load of different characters. You meet a lot of different people. Every different brand is a different team you're working with constantly. So it's not everyone you're gonna like. It's just life. It's just how it is. You just gotta get on with it. Same with school. You just gotta get on with it. You gotta just, you know,
just
you're there to do a job at the end of the day. Just do your job to the best you can and just be professional as you can. That's life. Sometimes you do things you don't like, but just gotta get.
What was like one of your worst experience with a brand?
My worst experience with a brand. I don't think I've. I should definitely have.
Should have one. Like,
one at least, you know. Actually, yes, I think I might have a bad experience. So basically, this was a couple months ago. To be fair, it's not that bad experience, but I was just tired and I just kind of wanted to go home.
You're like, get me out of here. Right?
I want to go. So I think this might have been my second shoot abroad, and my second shoot abroad, I'd flown out. I'm not going to say the country because
flown somewhere.
Yeah, I've flown out somewhere
in the world,
and I've flown out somewhere there, and I've landed in the airport. To get to the villa, there was no one at the villa. So the people that I was meant to be shooting with they were meant to be like at the Villa. So they said they're shooting something else because they had other models there at the time. So shooting them or chill around the airport or chill around the town while you can. I'm tired from flying.
Yeah.
I'm tired. I've got heavy suitcases and luggages. I kind of just want to like sit down. I don't want to have to be worrying. And it's just a bit of a hassle. See, I've gone down to the Villa now and I've shot with them the following day and the next day as well. Then I've come back on, I think this is the fourth day or the third day or whatever, and they'd all got different flights to me. Mm-hmm. So everyone had left at different times. They left in the morning and some have left in the afternoon. No, everyone's pretty much left in the morning. They're all going to different areas in the UK. Mm-hmm. I was the only one that was... No, I think a couple of us were going to Manchester, but my flight, for some reason, was booked at 5.
In the afternoon?
In the afternoon.
Okay.
So you're probably like, what's this kid going to do in another country with bare suitcases?
Yeah. Because everybody else, like, throughout the morning.
Everyone's left. And the Villa, it's almost like a hotel almost. Got to check out at a certain time, obviously. So checkout's done. So I'm not chilling there anymore. So I'm going to have to go around.
With those suitcases.
Around the suitcases. I mean, I chilled at the beach and stuff. The weather was
with
good.
Suitcases.
To get on me. With suitcases. That's and it's true. Like, oh, I might just go to the bar or something. Let me get a couple of drinks. With suitcases.
Yeah.
Let me go get some food. With suitcases. Yeah. But honestly, that's just the petty. That's just me being petty. Whole experience just being shooting abroad was honestly unreal. Seeing another part of the world. I might not have obviously got an opportunity to see to, it's paid for.
So do they pay for your hotel, your flights and everything like that?
For that shoot, everything was paid for. Flight, food and obviously the shoot itself. Mm-hmm. But obviously all brands are, negotiations are different. Mm-hmm. So you might not get paid for your hotel, but then you're getting paid enough for your shoot and they'll pay transportation.
Are there any kind of like working in the industry? Are there any kind of, because you know you hear a lot of like opinions online, conspiracy theories. So have you heard about any kind of horror stories with like modeling and stuff like that?
I was trying to get me in trouble.
They need to talk about your personal experience.
No, I have like... definitely. I have.
Bro, you know when someone smiles like that, you know there's like there's stories behind that smile.
I'm just a smiley person. What camera? I'm looking at this camera, yeah. I'm just a smiley person. I've had my own experiences with like, a bit of a sticky situation. Obviously, when you work abroad and you don't speak the same language, it's a bit hard to interpret what people are saying. So anything could be going on, but there's certain words that you just, you know, when it's like broken, well, not broken English, but broken the language, you can understand. You're like, a couple of my mates, they tell me stories. Like when I was in Barcelona last November, I stayed in the model accommodation. So I got to meet with loads of different models from my agency and we all kind of sat down and told different experiences, brands that we like to work with and other models that we've met through modeling that we've all got similar friendship groups with and how they felt with working with them. But the stories sometimes you hear inside the modeling industry are honestly crazy.
Have you heard, so if you can give me like briefly a story of something you've heard, like a random story you might have heard.
Bro wants the juicy stuff.
Juicy stuff. I need the clips.
You need the clips. So juicy stuff. What can I
the
give
people want to know, bro?
He wants the juice. All right. So there was one time I was. Bro, you're coming with some questions, you know. My brother's gonna hate me if I get this wrong, you know. Oh, bro, I could just see my brother. He's cussing me out right now, you know. He's like, you see? you know, your ball knowledge is good, yeah? Is this brother having a laugh? All right, we went from Monday to football to Queen Elizabeth. This guy's thinking, this is a joke period, isn't it? This is jokes, isn't it?